Welcome back to another episode of The Witch Doctor, a podcast audio play brought to you by me, Aquanimous Rex. I want to thank everyone who has been listening to and sharing the podcast. I've seen a massive spike in downloads over the last week, and it's all thanks to you. The absolute best way to help out this project is to share, like, review, and generally interact on social media with anything related to it, and at no cost to you. It helps people find my podcast on different platforms and gets the word out. The Chapter 1 compilation project is still in its embryonic stages. I am coordinating with other folks so as to have the best variety of voice actors for the different characters. Just a reminder that the Chapter 1 compilation will be episodes 0, Introduction, through to 9, Messenger. I'm also planning on purchasing a higher quality microphone, so keep your ears peeled for that. Last episode, we followed Artemis as she ran through the strange forest and met a new acquaintance. This episode, we go back to the middle of Noel, where Administrator Plord sits panicked and confused, awaiting the return of the ascetic brother Salvatore. Thank you for listening. The Witch Doctor, Episode 13, Gnosis. The chilly humidity of the nighttime air was doing nothing to alleviate a rising, feverish heat that was growing within Edmund Plord. All of the windows in his office were wide open, and a couple of moths flew repetitively into the hanging light bulb above his desk, which itself was covered in piles of paperwork which were messily strewn about, looking as though someone was rifling through the administrator's stuff, which in fact somebody was, the administrator himself. Sitting forward in his comfortable office chair and picking papers at what seemed like random, reading through them and tossing them aside once again to join their brethren. Thoughts kept floating through Edmund's head, which he tried like hell to shut out, but was unsuccessful. He felt split in two, of two minds, of two batches of memories. In one, he could clearly remember the otherwise uneventful day that the ascetic brother had arrived to town about 6 months ago. In the other mind, he knew, for a fact, that he had never seen Salvatore before tonight, the first time being at the hasty, hectic meeting after Isaac Scriven's disappearance, not much more than an hour ago. These two facts, these paired sureties, could not or would not reconcile themselves. No psychological compromise, no neurological assimilation. They just hung there, both true and real and confusing the ever-loving fuck out of the simple bureaucrat. Salvatore had given Plord a few instructions, things to move and to gather, which the man had accomplished easily enough in about 5 minutes. A small backpack full of random odds and ends the ascetic brother had listed to be gathered sat on the floor near the closed office door. The last part of Salvatore's instructions were more difficult. He had insisted that Plord locate within the town records, a paltry and unorganized collection, all the information he could possibly get on the four lost children. Plord had quickly found the files for Corey Brook, age 10, and Kyle Baker, age 8, but he could not seem to locate the files on Paula Proudfoot, who was younger than the two boys and whose parents were not exactly known for their stringent adherence to official filing procedures. Isaac Scriven was the youngest child to be taken, only 2 years old, and Plourd knew for a fact that his paperwork was not processed yet. He had already badgered the sisters for them, but was put off time and time again, with promises of next week, for sure, and yeah, totally. In the office, along with the stacks of filing boxes, was an antique and well-maintained bookshelf. Most of the texts were on history. Anyone who took the time to look through the tomes would see that Edmund preferred to stay between the 16th and current century, though it could not be said nearly as many books had been written since the sudden, furious clashes that had come about due to the perpetual recession and various resource wars and the following bad times. Most of them were not on war at all, but instead about the rise and fall of kings, cultural and technological revolutions, feuds between ancient families, and so on. The only war books on the shelves were those dealing with the European wars of religion between the years 1524 AD to 1648 AD. Nestled between these texts, however, standing out to the keen observer here and there, were books on dreams, many of which he was sure would get him into trouble with the party if they gave a shit about his existence at all, or that of Noel, which they did not. A copy of Carl Jung's essay, On the Nature of Dreams, was secured in an otherwise nondescript binder, and a copy of Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming by Stephen LaBerge was tucked away, squeezed between two books on the fall of monarchies in Europe, spine facing inward. Both of the books, if the loose paper-filled binder could be called a book, had been purchased off of traders heading up north who had stopped for a night in Noel a year or so ago. Edmund had been extremely nervous making the trade, but no battle deacons nor witch-finders had busted down his door to arrest him on suspicion of moral corruption, heresy, and witchery. Had Noel been a town of any note, located anywhere but this backwater part of the northeastern territories, Plourd might have had a reason to worry. But nothing came of it, and he had begun to read into the subject of dream interpretation and lucid dreaming, topics which felt exotic and thrilled him immensely, bringing a sense of danger and line-crossing into his otherwise dull life. Edmund wasn't that good at remembering his dreams, but nonetheless diligently kept records of the ones he could recall, journaling them as one of his books had instructed. Plourd, being unable to initiate any sort of lucid dreaming experience, had noticed a sudden increase in his dream recall, right before the first child had been abducted. After that, he no longer wanted to remember his dreams. They were nightmares, or something like nightmares, perhaps more sinister and disturbing than a nightmare. While he was unable to clearly recall the plots of these dreams, they seemed to consist mainly of unspeakable, ineffable monstrosities, diabolical acts, and other more abstract terrors. He had stopped recording his dreams, afraid that he was starting to go insane. The man had become so worn down that part of him began to wonder if he were the one abducting the children, if he had been sleepwalking and stealing them in the night, repressing the memories every morning with the sunrise. This paranoid fear abated only when Paula Proudfoot was taken, as Plourd had been awake, horrified at the idea of sinking back into his Stygian dreamscapes.
"Christ, was that really last night?" Edmund said, shocked at himself.
It was as though, with Isaac now missing, everyone had forgotten the young girl.
"Which we pretty much have," he admitted to himself.
The Proudfoots were an asocial family, tight-lipped and always busy with something or other, never stopping to shoot the shit with the other townies, rarely even allowing their child to roam around the inner palisades part of Noel. though she was quite popular and had many friends with the local children, of whom which numbered maybe a dozen. It was easy to forget Paula, even though that truth stung Edmund when he realized it, because she wasn't an attention seeker. Neither were her folks. The Proudfoots had friends, but Edmund wasn't one of them, so he couldn't claim to know how they were dealing with the girl's disappearance. He stopped rifling through the files and papers on his desk and slumped back in his chair. He was beat. Edmund had not slept the previous night and felt strange, almost ill. His dual minds wrestled with each other over Salvatore. His guilt worked on him about being useless to help stop the kidnapping epidemic that had swept up the town. Sitting still for only a few moments in peace, Plord sat up suddenly when he heard the telltale sounds of Brother Salvatore's walking stick against the retrofit church floor, echoing ominously throughout the large main room. Edmund stopped moving, even stopped breathing, as the sound of the stick drew closer and closer to his closed office door, and he began to feel wriggling fear work itself up from his guts when the noise stopped and the doorknob rattled, and Salvatore let himself in without so much as a word of warning. The old man closed the door behind himself, shuffled over to the visitor's chair across Plord's own, and plopped down in it, without even glancing at the administrator. When the ascetic brother spoke, it nearly caused Edmund to jump out of his chair.
"So, Plord, have you done what I asked of you? Have you compiled what resources I require?"
Salvatore asked him, gazing neutrally into Edmund's eyes. Edmund gulped and nodded slowly, his voice catching in his throat. He remained silent.
"Good. Well, what about the files, the information?"
At this, Edmund's face turned bright red and his eyes widened. The administrator tried to speak, his voice once again catching, but he coughed and cleared it and continued.
I did find Brooke and Baker. The Proudfoot girl isn't here, neither is Abram's kid."
Salvatore scowled at this news, his wrinkled mouth tightening, his hands clenching more intensely the walking stick which he clutched even now.
"I should have expected as much from you boony-dwelling Thebes. Oh well, we will have to do without."
The ascetic brother looked away from Edmund suddenly, studying the administrator's bookshelf, which Edmund noticed and which set his heart pitter-patter, palpitating out of fear. But Salvatore's eyes did not linger and roamed around the room.
"I spoke with an angel of God tonight, Plord. Something you do not have the intellect nor spiritual fortitude to comprehend or appreciate the gravity of. I was sent to this shit-stained backwater without knowing why, other than generally carrying out my vows. I followed the dreams where they took me, and they took me here."
Salvatore straightened in his chair, looking back at Plord now.
"This town might be a hellhole, but it's a special place. Can you feel it, Edmund?"
Edmund, momentarily taken aback by both the content of the ascetic brother's words as well as being referred to by his first name, he said nothing, and Salvatore continued.
"Well, it is. There aren't many places an angel will choose to manifest itself, and they've only revealed themselves to me outside of dreams once before, when I was a much younger man. Well, it is. There aren't many places an angel will choose to manifest itself, and they've only revealed themselves to me in this way once before, when I was a much younger man."
Salvatore trailed off, eyes clouding slightly at some hidden reminiscence, but he focused again and, barely missing a beat, continued his one-sided conversation with the administrator.
The fact that an angel was willing to manifest itself here is no coincidence. The fact that children have gone missing here is no coincidence either. I had some ideas what was going on, but I was wrong. The gnosis, the sacred knowledge imparted to me by the angel, has clarified this situation.
Plord stared at the elderly man, mouth agape, unable to respond, convinced that he was simply going nutty from a lack of sleep and that the man before him was just a lunatic. When Salvatore had said the word gnosis, the man had gently touched his own cheek, which had a slimy, gleaming look to it, Edmund realized, and Salvatore bore a fond, blissful look over his face. This look did not last, and Salvatore squinted his eyes again at the administrator.
"You're looking at me funny, Plord. Do I sound insane? Do you think that I am a liar? Well..."
Salvatore unhooked one of his gnarled hands from his walking stick and performed a brief, fast-paced series of hand signals in the air between the two of them.
"Stand up, Plord. Now."
Feeling as though his body were automated machinery, Plord rose. Salvatore gesticulated once again in a series of indiscernible, rapidly changing hand signs.
"Take a piece of paper, Plord, ball it up, and eat it."
Without hesitation, and without taking his eyes from the ascetic brother's own, Plord swiped a piece of paper from the table, balled it up, put it in his mouth, and began to try to swallow it. He coughed, and the ball of mushy paper fell from his mouth onto the desk. Willing himself to stop, Plord's hand obstinately reached out once again, plucked the pulpy package from the desk, put it in his mouth once more, chewed it up, and swallowed it, coughing again. When it was all over, tears streamed from the administrator's eyes, and Salvatore cackled.
"We work well together, Plord. Now grab the supplies and the files. We have a walk ahead of us."
Obediently, Edmund did just that, gathering up the backpack and the files he had procured on one half of the missing children, each file bearing a stamped monogram of the Party of Devout Fellowship over its cover. And then they left the office behind, windows open, moths beating themselves against the hanging, lonely light bulb. This has been The Witch Doctor, Episode 13, Gnosis, by Equanimous Rex. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for future episodes. Music attribution. The intro is Come Play With Me by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. The outro is Iron Horse, also by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Both of the songs are licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.